Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Good evening. Welcome to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. I'm Bob Ginsberg, and I'm joined by Tom and Melissa Gould and Fran Ginsberg. And we're here, as we always are, the first Thursday of every month. And we're picking a different topic. Tonight's topic is going to be deathbed visions. I don't know about you, but I can't get enough of those. I think that they're extremely evidential, and they hold the key, I think, to future research. But before we get started, we've got a whole bunch of events planned and coming up.
So let's all talk about it. But first, I just want to remind everybody, because everybody seems to be forgetting in this, as the nice summer months roll along, that when they do go on the Internet to go shopping, to do one of two things. Either go to the Forever Family Foundation website first and click on the Amazon link to shop on Amazon, or sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as your charity of choice. And then when you have signed up with them, you can download this cute little wish feather that stays on your website. And whenever you go to any other website that's listed in their mall, their 1,400-plus online stores that you're probably already shopping at, like Bloomingdale's and Cheap Tickets and DSW, you automatically will generate a donation to Forever Family Foundation. And considering how difficult it is to get grants and money and all that kind of wonderful cash that other not-for-profits get because they're not talking about the afterlife, because they're not talking to the dead. They get all this money that we somehow don't get. So we depend on these kinds of contributions from organizations, and we need your help to secure those donations. So please remember that when you shop, try to remember to go to the Forever Family Foundation website before you go to Amazon and use the Amazon link there, on any of the pages, or sign up with iGive.com and download the little wish feather to your website, and then whatever shopping website you go to will automatically generate a donation to us without you even having to think twice. So we would appreciate everybody who does that, and that adds to the financial backing of all the programs that we run, including this radio show. And on to events, we can chat a few about our grief retreat that's coming up on the weekend of July 25th. And we are back at Guest House in Chester, Connecticut. And we have all kinds of wonderful, wonderful things that we have planned for the weekend. I'm not going to take up everybody's time here now. Just go to the website, click on the links, check it out. There's every kind of a link there that you could possibly want. What the guest house is like, what kinds of food, what the agenda is for the weekend, also what the agenda is for the parent-only day. There's a 24-hour addition to this weekend retreat that starts on Thursday at 4 o'clock and goes through to the end of Friday at 4 o'clock with a little added surprise after 4 o'clock that I'm not going to disclose. And you can get all the details for this wonderful retreat. The Thursday-Friday event is for bereaved parents only, and they're, of course, invited to stay for the whole grief retreat. And then for all other losses, we have the whole weekend set up for everybody. So get over to the Forever Family Foundation website and check it out and make your reservations now, because there's only a few spots left. We keep this a very small intimate group of like-minded people deliberately. Then the following week on July 29th, a Tuesday night at Long Island University, the CW Post campus, we are hosting Dr. Piero Calvi Parassetti. He's an MD from Italy, actually lives in Scotland right now, and he's going to deliver a presentation on the current evidence of the afterlife. So the evening will be The Afterlife, the Scientist's View, and he's followed by Demonstration of Spirit Communication for everyone in attendance by Forever Family Foundation's own certified medium, Laura Lynn Jackson. It's a special evening, and the price of a seat is only $15. So hurry up, go to the website, reserve your seats, because as it gets closer, they're going to be very sparse. I think at $15, people just buy the seats just to make sure they have it, not even thinking twice about whether or not they're going to be free that Tuesday night. So go ahead. It's summertime Tuesday night at Long Island University. Great evening for everyone. And lastly, we want everybody to plan for the November conference starting. We're going to start early this year. This is going to be a grand convention this year. We're bringing together all of the major organizations that have dedicated their work to investigating survival of consciousness. This is something you definitely, definitely, definitely do not want to miss. We're going to start arriving on November 5th, and we're going to have all kinds of events planned through to November 11th, with the actual annual Afterlife Conference taking place on Saturday and Sunday, November 8th and 9th, as it normally is. And a big surprise, we have a whole day at the Rhine Research Center that's going to be really an unbelievable blast. And that's limited seating, so if you are going to go, you want to make up your mind now. We're going to be in Durham, North Carolina at the Marriott. And again, just go to the website and reserve your seats. And my advice is do it now. And lastly, if you're a business and you'd like to advertise on that on this show, send us an email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Okay.
Well, that takes care of the show for tonight.
All right.
We're good.
We are gathered here today to talk about deathbed visions. And what we mean by that, I'm sure that most of our listeners know that a great number of people approaching death, it doesn't have to be right at the moment of death, it could be a week or two before, begin seeing visions of departed loved ones. And it's a lot more common than people think. So I guess the question to throw out there would, a lot of people, when you say the term near-death experience, or NDE, they know what you're talking about. There's stuff that's written and so forth, and but yet when you say deathbed visions, that I mean, we are familiar with it, of course, but a lot of the general public, I don't think that they know that term. So why do you think people are aware of near-death experiences but are unaware of deathbed visions?
Well, because the person who has them can't tell other people about them other than their loved ones who are there right at the end. But, you know, somebody who has an NDE, like an Eben Alexander, he goes off and does lectures about it, whereas somebody who has a deathbed vision goes somewhere else.
Right.
Well, lecture about it.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. I mean, just by definition, if you have a deathbed vision, you're not coming back to the physical. So you're right, you can't talk about it. So, but you're also right that the reason that we know that people have them is from the things that the person that's dying says to family, friends, and the mental health professionals. So you think also it has a lot to do with, you know, these surveys show that there was one survey that was done, Emily Kelly at the University of Virginia, you know, did a study of hospice locations, and she went around to many hospice workers, and she asked them, you know, what percentage, she was trying to determine what percentage of these healthcare professionals witnessed their patients having deathbed visions. So, you know what percentage, you want to give a guess of what percentage that they that came up? Give a wild guess. I mean, this is something that nobody knows about, so I think you would say normally like 10% or 20%, but it was 54% of all the workers, the healthcare workers, and you know. So, but then going back to our original question, I guess the answer lies in these professionals, as Tom said. I mean, it's not the people that are dying that are telling us about it. The first hand. The first responders, so to speak, are these professionals. Why aren't they talking about it? You know, any ideas?
Maybe they're told not to talk about it. Maybe they're, and it could just be the same religious stigma that goes along with everything else. You know, if you don't recognize it and you don't talk about it to other people, then it doesn't exist.
And you don't want to be viewed as a kook because it isn't the norm.
And, you know, it's easily written off as delusional because you're dying. If you're going to see and hear things, your mind is not functioning properly, supposedly.
Yeah, I'd agree. It's all those factors. You know, you got religion that comes in. It's like a taboo. I think Fran and I had an experience once where we were in a hospital. I forget the circumstances. It wasn't the person that we were seeing. But we asked, one of...
Oh, I know. There was somebody in the other room that was carrying on very loudly.
Right.
And we asked one of the nurses who was in the room with us and the person we were visiting. And what was her response? It was something like, oh, he's just getting ready to die. It was like, her response.
Wow. Well, what I found out was that the nursing profession, especially in hospice or in critical care and things along with dealing with patients that are dying, that's their barometer, that's their indicator. When the patient starts having these visions, they know that they're approaching death. But yet, it's matter of fact, and then we don't talk about these things. They just use it as like it's like a clinical tool for them. You know, it's kind of amazing, that way. But I think, we touched on a lot of these things. Their religion, their education, right? They're trained to, and the doctors are trained. This flies in the face of what they've learned. So it puts their credibility, at risk. And then you have the fear of being labeled or so all those things, factor into it. But, I don't know. I think that the key to raising more awareness about this is getting these professionals to start talking about it, and I think there are strides that way. I mean, there are people that are big in parapsychology and that study near-death experience and deathbed visions that go around talking to their peers and even giving presentations in medical schools, and it's part of their training.
Well, what would they think that it proves, if the deathbed vision? Does it mean that spirit is it proof of spirit? Is it proof of survival of consciousness?
Well, I mean, the certainly to the caretakers, I mean, I think they're leaning on the side that this is proof of survival, it's personal proof of survival. The doctors, for the most part, probably chalk it up to hallucinations, a product of a dying brain. I think the family that witnesses this are probably split on the issue. Some people are open to it and recognize what's going on, and the others think the same way. Where they mentioned to the doctor what's going on, the doctor said, "Oh, it's just, this is a product." So, but the people that have these visions, it has a calming, soothing, reassuring effect on them. It's almost as if these visitors, as part of a plan, are coming to help them,
support them,
make them, make that transition. And what do you think?
Well, I was touched by a story I read or heard about many years ago when the comedian Sam Kinison, I think his name was, was in a car accident at West, and I think another car of his buddies was behind him, and his car crashed. And he did die in the accident, but before he died, the other car, caught up and ran over to him. Just in time to hear him, his final words going, oh, I see. And it was just so peaceful, they said, his passing, as if
right.
he had this, was being told something or shown
right.
something.
Right, sort of like the Steve Jobs, you know, at the end saying,
Wow.
Well, there's a lot more to talk about. We're going to go to our first break, and we come back. We're going to be talking more about deathbed visions, who has them, what do they see, what do they describe, and we'll get into that. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Has your marketing pitch been missing the strike zone? Maybe you need a new player to help your marketing efforts. At LNRProductions.com, you'll find a team that can give your broadcast advertising the winning edge. L&R Productions has produced award-winning jingles, radio and television commercials for many businesses just like yours. Radio and television advertising work, but you need the right game plan. Make sure you're getting the most out of your ad every time it airs. www.LNRProductions.com. We'll throw strikes for your business every time.
Many people, just like you, hope that we continue to another existence after we die. It's a nice thought, but could it really be true? The answer is yes. There is an overwhelming amount of scientific evidence that tells us this is so. On July 29th, come hear medical doctor and university professor Dr. Piero Calvi-Parasetti as he shares a visual presentation of the life after death evidence at Long Island University in Brookville, New York. Dr. Parasetti, also a noted psychotherapist and bereavement specialist, and former humanitarian advisor to the United Nations, can show you how to turn simple hope into deep knowing. He will be joined in the second part of the evening by certified medium Laura Lynn Jackson, who will demonstrate spirit communication as further evidence of an afterlife. Advanced reservations are only $15 for members and $20 for non-members. For reservations and information, visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770. Have you lost a loved one and feel that they are gone forever? Do you sometimes wonder how people can continue meaningful lives after devastating grief takes hold? Come join Forever Family Foundation in Connecticut on July 25th through the 27th, as they host a special, all-inclusive weekend of sharing, learning, exploring, and discovering. This weekend will not only deal with the challenges of loss and grief, but professional facilitators and mediums will also focus on ways we can all communicate with deceased loved ones and maintain our relationship with them. Attendees will be experiencing grief recovery techniques, spirit communication by certified mediums, meditations, psychic development exercises, and will also learn about some of the scientific evidence that we survive physical death. The weekend will feature small workshops for a relaxed and hands-on experience. Bereaved parents can also register for a separate program starting on the evening of July 24th through the 25th. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org, 631-425-7707.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Back to the gathering on Signs of Life Radio. And by the way, if any of our listeners have witnessed a friend or a family member who had a deathbed vision, or if any of our listeners are mental health professionals and they wanted to lend some insight, please give us a call at 1-888-627-6008. You know, we're talking about deathbed visions, and, you know, from reading about this stuff, who do you think... when people report seeing deceased loved ones, what's the most reported loved one being seen? Like, what relationship to the dying would you guess?
Mother.
You know what? I almost wouldn't say parent just from some of the books I've read. It isn't a parent.
Well, according to the research, it's a mother.
It is.
It is a mother. Aww. You know, and the reason... You know, when trying to look at the data, it makes sense, you know, because that's the person that brought you in, you know, and then the mother's coming to take you out, you know, to back.
Now, your mom, Fran, seemed to have had, be having a vision near the end of her life.
Yes, the problem was it was all in Hungarian, so we really couldn't understand what she was saying.
Well, you know, I think it's next week's guest is Patricia Pearson,
right.
Wrote a book, wonderful best-selling book, name escapes me, The Heaven's Door, and I learned a lot. She recaps a lot of the research, but she said that when people die, it's like 50% of them are clear and lucid, you know, when they're approaching, you know, death, and about 50% reach this state of agitation and you know, and stress and disorientation and like that. And I didn't realize there was so many. That's what Fran's mom was going through. You know, she was kind of thrashing about. But at the same time, she was exhibiting all of these classic things that people that are having deathbed visions. She was definitely talking to her mother. She was reaching out, you know, which led me to believe that she's reaching out to somebody, you know, with outstretched arms, you know. So, and, you know, people in that confused state, she couldn't tell us what she was seeing. But I guess other people that have these clear, you know, visions and don't reach that state of confusion are able to quite normally and, you know, tell their loved ones what they see. They express surprise that, you know, their loved ones are not, you know, seeing them. So it's, I guess not everybody. They said, I read another statistic, they said that 10% of people, only 10% are conscious, at the time of death, you know, or just before. But out of that 10% is a very high percentage that have these. So it leads me to believe, I think the other 90% that are unconscious are still having them. They just can't tell.
You know, I had mentioned Eben Alexander before, and for the skeptics out there who dismiss it out of hand, that it's mind playing tricks on you, you know, near-death hallucinations, all of that sort of thing. If you get his book and read his book, don't skip the appendix section, because there's one appendix chapter that he, as a neurologist, explains away how it can't possibly be your mind playing tricks on you and that sort of thing. So that's it's an excellent bit of writing as far as bringing this into the scientific realm.
Yeah, you know, being a neuroscientist, somebody with great academic training, it lends a bit more credence to it, you know, because he's especially coming from a place where he didn't believe in this stuff at all, didn't think it was possible. The research that's been done with this shows that people that are heavily medicated, which is used by the skeptics as an explanation for the deathbed visions, they have it less frequently, you know, than people that aren't medicated. So it doesn't seem to hold water, you know.
Yeah.
I mentioned briefly people reaching out, which seems to be a common thing. They also, when they did all these surveys, people see these visions in a specific part of the room. It's usually in a room. It's not outdoors because, you know, they're the patients. So oddly enough, they said it happens most frequently in the corner of the room. They're looking at any thoughts on that? Why they're always talking to the people, not always, but most of the time in the corner of the room?
How do they know it's the corner and not just like they're looking to the left?
Yeah.
Why are they looking at the corner?
I don't know. They seem to identify, you know, like the specific, they say towards the corner of a room. Now, I don't know if it's always the same corner, you know. I just thought it was odd. Why wouldn't they? You would think they would be directly in front of you as opposed to off in the corner?
Well, I can't remember the book. But there was a book that was talking about how there are vertices in the world, and that is where spirit has portals. And, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, the corner of a room is a vertex. So maybe that's why it's geometrically attracted to the vertices.
Yeah, that's as good an explanation as any.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is really happening in these deathbed visions? I mean, do you think that our loved ones are really materializing there in the room, or do you think that they may be imprinting their image on us somehow?
Almost feel like they've got one foot there and one foot here still. The person is dying.
Right, they're living in two worlds. But what about the person that's visiting, their loved one?
Maybe they have the ability at that moment.
Don't you think that the person that's visiting is always there anyway?
And
now they're just capable of actually visually seeing them because all of their physical guards are down. And now they're capable of seeing what was there all along.
And certainly the books that I've read and what I've heard from mediums' readings and that sort of thing is that there is always a spirit, usually a loved one, that is waiting for you to greet you when you come across from the living to the other side, to the afterlife. And a lot of what spirit does, they do by permission from the higher beings. I just finished reading the book about Billy Fingers, the afterlife of Billy Fingers. Annie Kagan was the author of that, and that's what Billy said, that he was given permission to tell his sister his story so she could write it in a book and get it out. Otherwise, she would never have been able to hear him or. And at certain levels in his progression, he would not even be able to come back and talk. But he was given, his purpose was to get this message through. So I think that the loved one spirit that is given the task, if you will, or the permission to greet the family member that's coming across, they have more abilities allowed to them at particularly close to the point of death, where yes, you can actually see the person. You know, it's a familiar face, and you know, greeting you and letting you know everything's okay. You know, you're coming home basically.
Yeah, it's interesting. As you were talking about that, you know, with the people in spirit having the ability, you know, it's easier for them, you know, like to cross back over into this world than maybe the opposite way. But I was reading someplace recently about somebody was describing how people in spirit gather in little seances when they, because they want to contact people in the physical.
You shouldn't be laughing.
Why not?
I love it. Yeah. Oh, I'm not laughing. I'm loving it. I think that's really cool.
That makes a whole lot of
yeah.
sense to me.
Yeah, I love that.
It's just another world there.
Yeah, it's an effort on both sides.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. You know, another common denominator among the people that are dying and have these visions is they keep talking about travel. Evidently, that's a big theme. You know, they keep saying things like, you know, pack my bags, you know, is the car ready, you know, is the plane ready, or is, you know, like they're definitely going to a land.
Wow.
not only they're traveling, but they're excited about, you know, the travel, you know. So and sometimes these are people that didn't believe in an afterlife, you know,
and I think that again, you're going telepathic concept is what they're experiencing. They know they're going to be going someplace. They're all excited about going someplace. It's the same way we get excited if we're going to be going on a cruise or a trip or mm-hmm. something like that, because we're preparing for it, we're getting ready for it. This whole telepathic concept is what they're getting. You're getting ready. So, of course, they're going to talk about anything from their physical standpoint that they have experienced when they would go on any other trip. So I need to pack my bags. I need to get the car ready. I need to do all of these things in preparation for the trip, where we know that that's not true, but they're in a relaxed state of mind, and they're getting this information telepathically, and they're relating to it from their own cultural point of view.
Yeah. Well, that also made me think, because certainly people have this, if they see a vision, you know, and they're told that they know that person is there to help them cross over, they know they're going on a trip. And yet there are people, based upon personal experiences that they've had, and you know I'm thinking about Tom's mom, you know, who also are excited about a trip, but not necessarily having a deathbed vision, mm-hmm. just because of the experience that they have. They have that inner knowledge, right, Tom? And wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, that she was looking forward to it, looking forward to being back with her husband. You know, another book, well, a disc that I'm listening to, talking about mindfulness, that when you have a mindful existence, where you basically, what that means is that you are an observer of your own physical existence, and studies show that people who have that frame of mind or mindfulness accept and have easier passings, because they're just observing it from basically from where they're going.
Makes perfect sense.
You know, we were, because we believe in this, and because Tom's mom was excited, we were with her right up until her crossing over, and we were really hoping to be witness to a deathbed vision, but I cannot say that did occur. She was in her home, 24 hours or a little bit more than 24 hours before she died, and we had to move her into hospice. We didn't know she was that close to the end, but
right.
It became too difficult to keep her in the home, so we moved her to the hospice. And we were right there by her side and really hoping that we would hear something, but she pretty much was in an unconscious state.
Right, so you don't know. And, you know, besides that, I would guess that because she was so well-versed in this, is that if she saw her husband in, you know, in spirit, she wouldn't think twice about it. You know,
yeah.
So, you know, so she, you know, there are also these, experiences, they the term Pekindarian. I don't know where the name came from, Pekindarian experiences. And that's where people that have these visions and a deceased loved one comes to visit, they didn't know that loved one really died. And that's extremely evidential. You're having a deathbed vision of from somebody that you, the last time you saw them, they were alive, and you had no way of knowing they're dead, and yet here they come. That's pretty interesting as well.
Yeah.
The deathbed visions have been studied since the 1920s. The book's written by Sir William Barrett, wrote a famous book in the, I think, 1924, 1926, all about these visions. So it's nothing new. Mm-hmm. But it's sad that 90 years since he wrote that book is gone by, and people, just as they didn't talk about it much then, they don't talk about it much now,
Yeah. Yeah,
so it's, well, we aim to change that.
Yeah. I think that also people that have these visions describe angels and religious figures, but that makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, it's usually based upon
cultural orientation.
Yes, same way as a near-death experience, right?
And of course, the spirit that wants to welcome you wants, is doing it in a loving, nurturing way, and wants to present the image that will give the person the most comfort.
Mm.
And so that's certainly understandable if they've been religious all their life, praying to one particular prophet. To have that prophet actually show up at your death is
right.
Pretty good.
Yeah, as good as it gets, right?
Yeah.
What a welcoming committee.
In the age of the selfie, I mean, we ought to get the deathbed selfies going.
I think you're on to something. Yes, my goodness. Wouldn't that be something? Someone's on their deathbed. You get next to them, hold up the phone, see who shows up in the picture. So we go to hospice tomorrow.
I don't think hospice is always excited to see us.
No.
Well,
most hospice.
Listen, we're focusing on hugs from heaven, right?
We
don't want to get into too many different ventures. You know? But all right, we're going to go to a break. And when we come back, there's lots more to talk about these deathbed visions. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Have you lost a loved one and feel that they are gone forever? Do you sometimes wonder how people can continue meaningful lives after devastating grief takes hold? Come join Forever Family Foundation in Connecticut on July 25th through the 27th as they host a special, all-inclusive weekend of sharing, learning, exploring, and discovering. This weekend will not only deal with the challenges of loss and grief, but professional facilitators and mediums will also focus on ways we can all communicate with deceased loved ones and maintain our relationship with them. Attendees will be experiencing grief recovery techniques, spirit communication by certified mediums, meditations, psychic development exercises, and will also learn about some of the scientific evidence that we survive physical death. The weekend will feature small workshops for a relaxed and hands-on experience. Bereaved parents can also register for a separate program starting on the evening of July 24th through the 25th. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org, 631-425-7707.
Many people, just like you, hope that we continue to another existence after we die. It's a nice thought, but could it really be true? The answer is yes. There is an overwhelming amount of scientific evidence that tells us this is so. On July 29th, come hear medical doctor and university professor Dr. Piero Calvi Parasetti as he shares a visual presentation of the life after death evidence at Long Island University in Brookville, New York. Dr. Parasetti, also a noted psychotherapist and bereavement specialist, and former humanitarian advisor to the United Nations, can show you how to turn simple hope into deep knowing. He will be joined in the second part of the evening by certified medium Laura Lynn Jackson, who will demonstrate spirit communication as further evidence of an afterlife. Advanced reservations are only $15 for members and $20 for non-members. For reservations and information, visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Welcome back to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. We're talking about deathbed visions. And so what's the purpose? I mean, what is the purpose of the deathbed vision? Is it to just relieve the stress of the dying? I mean, how would you summarize the whole thing?
It does sound like a peaceful ending or a transition. I shouldn't call it an ending. Is it ever reported not to be? It's like, what are you doing here? You know, and someone freaking out a little bit.
That happens. It's a minority, but there is a. It's just like people report hellish NDEs. You know, I mean, there are. I'm sure deathbed visions where people are unsettled by it.
Or if you're not exactly on your deathbed, but about to, is it always? I know we're not talking about necessarily in a bed, but maybe we are, because if somebody's suddenly hit by a truck seconds before the impact.
Right. Yeah.
Things happen fast.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's just a all-encompassing
term. Just like the story
term
that you told at the beginning. With
that's
Kinnison.
True.
So
right.
Well, he still had a deathbed vision. He just wasn't in a bed in a hospice or in a hospital.
You're right.
But he still had a vision. And I think that the ones that are negative are the same like the NDEs that are negative. Is it whatever your cultural orientation is, whatever you've been taught about self-judging yourself is what's going to put the fear into you. And fear is what we need to eliminate in this lifestyle here in order to have a full understanding of what life is about and what we're supposed to be doing here.
We talked about the most common visitor is the dying person's mother. So do you think it's a case where mom in spirit is sort of keeping tabs on what's going on, you know, with her son in the physical? Mm-hmm. Or do you think that this was part of a pre-plan, you know, where, you know, to us it's a long time, for them it's just a little blip, you know, to the mom in spirit. So she just knew at this appointed time she's going to have duties down here helping the crew. So how do you think that
well, like, it's like Fran said before, I brought you into this world, I will take you out.
Yeah, it's like I take you to the amusement park, I put you on the ride,
right,
and I'm there when the ride is over.
Aww.
And I'm going to take you back off.
Yeah. So you can say that our loved ones in spirit, to some degree, are always aware of what's going on here.
Yeah, I think they are.
Definitely.
And they've got you back. So that when you do need guidance, when you do need that little push, when you do need to be told, get off the parkway now because there's some big tragedy ahead, you somehow have this inkling to take the next exit and get off. And you don't know why you did that, but you did that.
Right. Do you think that there are people in the spirit world whose mission, if you want to call it a mission or a job, if you want to call it a job, is to help people cross over? I mean, not everybody has loved ones in spirit. I mean, you know, you...
Well, everybody has a mother.
Well, everybody does have, you know, but you know, maybe it's not a relative, you know.
In spirit, yeah. I mean, there's obviously a lot of people who...
Well, that's the biggest fear. That's the biggest fear that parents have when young children cross over. It's like, who was going to be there to greet them?
Right.
You know, I'm here, the grandparents are here, everybody's here. Who was going to help them cross over? That's always the biggest question.
That is an excellent
but
question.
If you realize that we are just consciousness, mm-hmm. and we are all connected, then there is some familiar consciousness that's there for that child, for that entity, for that spirit.
I think it's interesting that the people that have these visions, they get, in a sense, to focus. They have a chance to focus on the next life before they get there, not, you know, to some degree, you know, because they get a taste of, they're getting, they're straddling those two worlds, and they get a taste of what it's like. It's sort of, it's really great preparation. It's less of a shock, I guess, if you want to call it a shock, when you cross over, and less bewilderment. I mean, you know you're traveling someplace, you know, you get a glimpse of what it's like. You already know that there's somebody going to be there you're not going to be alone, and there's going to be people there to help. It's a tremendously comforting thing, you know. So, I mean, it's nice to think that everybody has a deathbed vision. I tend to think that myself, or maybe it's wishful thinking, but...
I know. My dad was wishing himself to die for many months before he actually succeeded, and I would ask my mom, is he talking about seeing anybody? Because I thought that might be a tip-off that the time was near, and she said no. But also, he wasn't talking to begin with, so who knows? If in his thoughts he was capable of speaking, he just had just become rather silent. And so who knows? In his mind, he could have been having conversations, but she was not aware of it.
Mm.
But I think for those people who do have somebody in that situation, to pay attention and definitely don't discount anything unusual that they might say or say they saw.
Right, and that happens so often, you know, family members, you know, sitting around, and they just automatically sort of chuckle in a sense, you know, that, oh, this is what happens, and, you know, you have these hallucinations, and my, isn't that interesting, but they don't even give a second thought to the real possibility that, you know, that they're actually, their loved one is telling the truth of what they see. And there are many accounts of the loved ones in the room sharing a vision. It's not as common, but actually seeing what the dying person is seeing.
I was just thinking about that as you said that, because I probably will say her name wrong, but I believe it was a woman named Joan Borsenko. Maybe some people have heard of her, but she was at a group with, you know, some of our well-known explorers of the metaphysical, and she talked about her son getting to go a little bit on that journey with his grandmother, her mom, when that woman was passing, and the grandson was sitting right there, and got a glimpse of the other side.
Yeah.
That sounded amazing.
Yeah, it really does.
A minute ago you mentioned you wondered if everybody had that, and having just finished the Billy Fingers book, I don't think he was greeted by anybody he knew. He was greeted by someone named Joseph that he called Joseph, but he didn't know Joseph.
Hmm.
So I think it's, you know, some people just, I guess, just go across and...
Yeah, but the Billy Fingers, I mean, I didn't read it, but from what I understand is the Billy Fingers book is channeled information.
Right.
So the person who's writing the book could be filtering the information according to their own cultural...
Well, he dictated it to her. I mean, if you read the book, it's done either in italics or in bold print, not necessarily bold, but non-italic, and everything that's in italics is, this is what he said to me. And, you know, she didn't understand a lot of it, but she wrote it down verbatim, supposedly, and because she was at her computer and she would just type it in. And then afterwards, she would go into her voice and make sense of what she said, or see how it in the next day or two what he said made
more
sense.
So she's still piecing it together, is my point, as opposed to somebody who, and to me, from a physical point of view only, automatic writing when you're holding a pen has got to be very different than claiming automatic writing at a computer or a keyboard. And it just seems that, again, we're talking about a book that was published by, in what year, you know, we're not talking about back in the 60s when you had these books that you really needed a publisher to publish.
Right.
Right now, everybody's channeling all kinds of books, all kinds of stories, all kinds of everything, and they don't match. So clearly, these channeled, quote-unquote, channeled experiences are all filtered on some level by the person who's receiving it. And we, Bob and I, had this conversation maybe last week, talking again on a similar topic, is I hear things all the time when I'm in a quiet state. And I write them all down. None of them make sense. Nothing makes sense, yet I know exactly what I heard. I know exactly what the sentence is. It doesn't make sense. Why am I hearing it?
I can understand that. That certainly makes sense. And the fact that this guy was supposedly talking from even a higher dimension than usually can communicate, you're right. That the person listening to it just can't understand what they're hearing in a lot of ways.
Right. And remember, it's coming we know it's telepathic.
Right.
When we're talking now, our radio show is not telepathic.
Right.
So we have a language by which we're communicating with and which by our listeners can understand what we're saying. When you get telepathic communication, it's totally different than us speaking like this. So again, now they have to take this information and put it into language.
Well, also, if there's this, you know, vast telepathic web of information, and you're getting stuff, you're writing it down, you're getting it as clear as a bell, but it doesn't make any sense. We don't know whether the message is meant for you. You may
right,
be picking up
exactly.
A message that was meant for Melissa.
I was going to say, I'd like to read what you've been writing.
Yeah. Years of journals, and you could try and make sense out of it.
Fran, this is clear as a bell to me.
Well, I think it's time for our healing message.
Healing wrap-up? Okay, we now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Anne Hutchinson, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Skandarian, Jeanette Davies, Marianne Pierzga, Julie B., Christina DiDonato, Barbara Patillo, David Haith, Rita Springer, Mark Maron, Vicki Steffi, Tim Donahue, Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Rita Dwyer, Eddie Roll, Karen, Andrea, Nina, Karen, Lauren, Barbara Ehrlichman, Brian from Chico, California, Doug Berry, Bobby Allison, Gina DiNadano, Philip McPhee, Tom Donahue, Barbara Russell, Wendy Lippo, Eileen Lafata, Perry Potter, Michael Tim, Lynn Austin, Glenna Irwin, Stanley Mullen, Tanya Cash, Andy O'Brien, Johnny Jackson, Henry Stark, and David Mello. And now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.